We're the Pragmatic Doulas.
This is a podcast where we talk all about birth and other interesting things.
Birth may be a goddess, but she doesn't want to be worshipped. She wants to be respected. She doesn't want incense. She wants
common sense.
Almost.
All right. Hello.
It's us again.
Here we are. It's me, Kim. Kim the doula.
And it's me, Suzanne, the pragmatic doula.
And me, Stephanie.
Yeah. We're the pragmatic doulas. We're not the fluffy doulas.
No.
We're not the woo-woo doulas.
No.
We're not the wild and crazy doulas. We are the pragmatic doulas.
That's how
Can we just go back a second and talk about how great the podcast with Sabrina was? Loved it.
Can we just bask in that for a second?
I mean,
I hope she's listening to this because she was awesome.
It was so good. And it made me think differently about, you know, sort of the way that I teach about certain things. So I super, super appreciated that.
Yes. Thank you so, so much. That St. Michael's Hospital is blessed, lucky, fortunate to have you. I went through the SMH OBGYN Instagram a few days ago looking for that little short video that they posted on there. And then I came across a post with Sabrina's face and I was like, oh, it's Sabrina. And I could even tell it was her with her mask on. I could recognize her with her mask on.
That was cool.
Yes. Yeah. I'm so glad she's there. So
absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So how is everybody today? Suzanne, how are you?
Oh, me first?
Yeah.
I'm okay. I just had a very good and delicious high protein, low carb, healthy fat meal that has filled me up. What was it? Really good quality turkey sausages, just sauteed with like lots of vegetables, including zucchinis and mushrooms and peppers. And then also some scrambled eggs thrown in there and a small avocado. It was a big giant bowl. So that should hold me until like dinner, I think. Yeah, I'm good. And you, Miss Stephanie, give us an update on your foot.
The foot continues to heal. It continues to hurt. But to add, have you ever just been like, I know, well, actually I'm asking the wrong person. Of course you two have also experienced that time where you're just done with your day and you just need to get into bed and everything be fine. I got into bed last night. I had made my bed with fresh sheets yesterday. I was feeling good about getting into bed and I went to pull up my blankets last night and did it too fast and I punched myself in the face.
Oh.
You ever just lay there going, yeah, today's over. I just left the blankets where they were and I went to sleep. It was so weird. Like, it's just, you're laying there, like marveling at yourself.
Marveling at how much you hate yourself. You know, like you're just punching yourself in the, I hate myself. You're like Dobby the house elf the last couple of weeks. You're just like hurting yourself. Stop doing that.
Oh, goodness. How about you, Kim? How are you doing today?
Yesterday was rough.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday sucked. Going and talking to, so we went to the trustee. I went to the house, my uncle's house, and the first person to show up was the home appraiser. He was like an hour early. So he like came in, took a bunch of pictures, and then kind of breezed out. And then next came the estate people who changed all the locks and stuff. I was like, okay, this is getting heavier. And they stayed. And then the trustees showed up along with the contents appraiser going around taking pictures and whatnot. And this house is extremely tiny. So having that many people in that house was overwhelming to say the least. Then there were like documents and forms to sign. And it just felt like shit, this is it. Like, this is the end of everything. like, yes, the funeral is coming and I get that. And that doesn't feel near as heavy, but this was like the final thing that I could do for him. And there's nothing I can do. You know what I mean? Like there's,
yes,
like the selling of the house and dealing with all his stuff and her stuff and all of this is like, it felt like that was like a sacred thing to be able to manage, but I don't. The yeah. way everything is written and it's what they wanted. It's what they wanted and mm-hmm. that's fine. Mm-hmm. But it still felt...
It's like more weird. Of an more abrupt of a closure than you kind yeah. of want. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because selling the house and all of that would be a process.
Yes.
And instead of a process, you just got closed. That's it.
You just walked out the door.
You've done. And yep. that's that.
Yep. Walked out the door and that was the end of that. And it was like, okay. Mm-hmm. Yep. There's that.
Yeah.
So yeah, it was
no longer needed. Thank you for your service. Goodbye.
No. And I mean, the thing is they were very nice. I mean, there was a moment yeah. where I was filling out this paperwork and I'm like, okay, I'm sorry. Can you just give me a second? And they're like, we can do this. We can leave these papers with you. I'm like, no, we have to do them now because if you're not here to do them with me, I don't know what the fuck I'm doing here. Mm-hmm. But it was like, okay. Yeah. Big breath. Try to be pragmatic, try to go through all of this. And then, yeah, and then it was just done. And then I cried all the way home and until, you know, my brain is like, you're fucking driving. You need to compartmentalize this crap until you are not behind a 2-ton motor vehicle.
Right. When your eyes are all blurred with tears, it's a little bit hard to drive. So smarten up for a second.
Yep.
You're almost home. You can collapse then.
Yeah, exactly. And thankfully my mom got there just cause she picked Allie up, just as I got home. So I was able to like talk to her and walk through that process with her. So yeah, and tomorrow I get to take these stupid papers to the courts to hopefully be the last step in my divorce. So this week has been, and I've been dealing, got his ashes on Tuesday and dealing with the funeral home. So this week's been kind of shit.
A lot of like wrapping up endings.
Yeah. Yeah. This is a week of endings.
Yeah.
I hadn't thought about it, but yeah, this is a week of endings. So next week is who knows? Yeah. Let's see. Maybe
how exciting.
It'll be a week of openings.
Yeah. Week of beginnings. Yeah. Because that is how it goes.
Yep.
One chapter ends and sort of begins.
That's right. Well, that's another thing. We need to pick a book for, we'll talk about this off screen, but we do need to pick a book. We do have a couple recommendations or a recommendation from Mara, who was in our book club.
Discussion one time. Yep.
Yeah. So we can look at that. And if there's anything else anybody wants to suggest for us, we'd love to, we might do this in another couple months and maybe start up again in January, I guess, maybe, because we've got a couple stuff. We got a little bit coming up. So yeah. And I can't read a book in a week. So.
Nor I anymore.
Anymore. No. Awesome. Yeah.
So there's too much adulting going on to be able to sit in one spot and just read that whole book. Although I I feel in my heart when I just think of that curling up, it's like binge watching something only better, where you get like a comfortable spot on the couch. No one is bothering you. Everyone's dealing with their own shit. And you just get to read a whole book. Like, do you remember that? So long ago, but it makes me so happy.
I used to do that when my kids were little. I used to just like let them do whatever. They would be finished their work or something. And it would be, you know, like afternoon. Everybody was a little bit too old for naps, but they were not too old to leave me the fuck alone and go do something quiet. So they would, and they loved that. They would go into the playroom that we had and have all sorts of imaginative play. And I was just like right there, but, and I had the ability to read through their noise. It didn't bother me at all. Cause you know, after a while you get acclimatized to that shit. So I had those three little ones at home. Somebody would come up to nurse and I'd just like lift my shirt and they'd nurse and I'd just keep on reading and not skip a beat. Somebody else would come up to nurse. And that's just how it was. So I got a lot of reading done. Even when my kids were little, I find it harder to read now. Yeah,
absolutely.
Harder to read now. Cause I still have house responsibilities. Now I have work responsibilities and, I have to actually carve out time to say, okay, I am going to read between 2 and 3:30 or whatever. And that feels harder to do than just saying, yeah, okay, guys, go play a little bit after lunch. Go play a little bit. I'm going to sit over here and read. And they'd be like,
and is that because adulting thoughts like invade your brain? Like, I need to do this. I need to do that. I need to follow up on that.
Yes. Also, work feels more invasive to my time even than my little kids. I guess because with my kids, I felt I was truly the boss. I could say, you guys, after lunch, you're going to play. And then I could just let them do that until I was ready to go make dinner or something. And it doesn't feel that way with work. It feels more like pressing. You have to do this. You should do this. You should do this. You should be doing this. So just screws up my leisure time, I tell you.
Well, how about I read our land acknowledgement for today and then we can talk about our topic.
How about we do that?
How about okay. that?
The land I am sitting on, raising my family on, working, dueling, supporting families on, is the traditional territory of many nations, including the Mississaugas of the Credit, the Chippewa, the Haudenosaunee, the Anishinaabeg, and the Wendat people. It is currently home to many diverse First Nations, Inuit, Métis peoples. I also acknowledge that Toronto and my area, specifically to the east of Toronto, is covered by Treaty 13. It was signed by the Mississaugas of the Credit, and the Williams Treaty is signed with multiple Mississaugas and Chippewa bands. At this time, I want to acknowledge that I have not moved any of the work that I intended to do to research, to find out about forward in the past 2 weeks. I feel like I need to say something like that out loud because I had this intention and I didn't allow what I knew to be right to take any precedence in the past 2 weeks. And because I had promised myself that I would do these things and setting intentions, I believe, creates change. Setting intentions following through creates more change. And I let myself down in that way, which means I feel like I let others down who could be positively impacted by whatever choice I made to move forward, educate myself and make change. So it is my intention to not do that. And I've actually set aside time to do some additional reading on the Truth and Reconciliation guidelines, outlines for how we can do better. So that is my plan for this coming Monday morning, where I've blocked off time to specifically follow up on that and make a list of things that my family and I can do.
Beauteous. Thank you. Thank you very much.
So what is our topic today? Well, you know what? Suzanne, you brought this up the other day as pain.
Yeah.
And I mean, as soon as you say pain, I want to take a fucking Tylenol. I mean, I want to grab my Gravol, take my Tylenol. I associate the word pain with migraines. But and something that I want to get rid of.
Yes. I mean,
who in the world signs up and says, yes, please give me pain?
You know what it brought up for me the other day? Like the reason why this, I started thinking about pain while I was driving, I was sitting at a stoplight. And for some reason I had this body memory. Has this ever happened to you? I had this body memory of back when I was in mostly junior high in the first few years after I first got my period, and I had the most horrendous cramping that, to be honest, only would last for about half of that first day of my period. But that pain was so debilitating, like it felt like a constant pressure
in my back and in my lower stomach, and my legs would feel so weak that I would go home from school crawling into my bed, just shaking and sweating. And I would crawl into bed and I would sleep. My mother would just come and check on me, but never, ever one time. And I was thinking about how this has affected my attitude about pain. Never one time did my mother say to me, "Here's an aspirin. Jamaican people are like, go lie down and drink some tea." That's it. And that's what she would do. And it always seemed to work because I would sleep for 2, 3, sometimes 4 hours. I'd get up. I would feel so tired and weak, but the pain would be gone. And that was it. And that continued until I was about 17 when I had my first baby. And then I didn't have that anymore. It just went away after I had my first baby. And it very, very much gave me an attitude about pain. And I secretly would judge other girls who took Midol or whatever other period pain things, because I would be dying. And it just never came up. Just like when I got pregnant at 16, nobody mentioned abortion. Nobody mentioned abortion. But for my 16, be like, hello, this is on the table. This is also an option on the table. So that's different about me. And I don't feel that way anymore. My whole entire approach and thinking about pain has changed, but that's how I grew up. So I'm curious to know how you guys grew up in terms of pain, and when you were sick and experienced pain when you were kids and growing up, how that was handled in your house. And if that has carried over to your adulthood. And then lastly, of course, if that has impacted your thinking about pain during childbirth and how that's handled.
Wow.
Not deep enough for you?
Well, I mean, from a period perspective. So I'll tell you, pain as a child, like child, I grew up around my aunts and my uncles and my grandparents, as you know. And we even lived with them at periods of time. And when my biological dad was around, it was pain, discomfort, colds were handled one way. And then there was my mom's way. And so after my dad left, it changed. When my dad was around, there was a lot of influence from traditional Chinese medicine. So a lot of touch points, there was a lot of massage. There was a lot, like as kids, I had horrible growing pains, and no one ever said children's Tylenol or children's aspirin or anything like that. Just everyone took turns rubbing my knees and my legs while I cried and vomited. And then after my grandparents moved away and with my aunts and uncles, and then my dad left, it was just my mom and my sister and I. And that's when I was introduced to the joy of Tylenol. Midol, really, because then we moved on to, I was kind of in that preparing for period time, and I got my first period, and I would have been one of those people that you judged, let me tell you, because I remember having my first period and feeling unwell the day before, not knowing that that's what was coming, getting it, and I thought I was dying. Like I so relate to that feeling you message, like your legs are jello because of the pain. It's like they're not behaving, and you're crawling. And I crawled into my room and I threw up on my carpeted floor, which was very upsetting to my mom. And I was sweating and I had diarrhea. And so she sent me back crawling to the bathroom, because that's where you vomit and you sweat and you have diarrhea. And she set up a bed on the floor of the bathroom for me. And then immediately she told my sister she was leaving. I was like, where's she going? And what she was doing is she was running to her friend's house to find out what she should do about me, because she's never had cramps. My mom had no cramps. She has 3-day periods and no cramps. She might have a bit of a headache on the first day. It's much like her birthing. She has like digestive upset and then shoots out a giant baby. That's it, you know? Like she walked into the hospital with my sister thinking that she was feeling unwell and suspected she might have a baby. And then she had my sister. Oh, just because she suspected because she wasn't feeling well. That's it. That's all she had. So she had no relatability to this. So thankfully her friend sent her for this thing called Midol. And she came back and she mashed it up in applesauce for me because I couldn't drink water at the time and try to get it into me. And it took the edge off and it, but really the first 3 days for me was, we stopped taking pain medication for a while because it just came back up. So the first 3 days were always just vomiting and sickness and pain. And then around day four, I could start taking Midol and it would take the edge off enough. And by day five, I could go back to school. And that, and then it was, yeah. So I guess I had a mix of it. I had to learn where to take pain meds and where to just go somewhere else in my head to move through it. But man, I look forward to day four. I looked forward to something being able to impact it. I did. Oh, you're muted.
Duh. I was going to say, so did that like carry over? How about your attitude about pain? Now pain and the use of medication for pain and then use of, and then pain during childbirth.
And how I would say, absolutely. So I also, when I hit puberty, I developed what were migraines, what we believed were migraines. And then when I got older and I was pregnant, my doctor informed me that they can't give me those medications for migraines during pregnancy. And we had tried some different things and stuff. And finally, my doctor, who is hilarious and has no filter whatsoever, says to me, why don't you go see this crack quack up on Lawrence? And I was like, a crack quack? He's like, go see a chiropractor. I've heard things about them. I don't know what to think about it, but some people say good things. I'm like, a crack quack. I mean, I didn't know what the hell he was talking about, but then I went to see a chiropractor. And so that strangely, my doctor opened up my eyes to something other than medication for managing it. Hi, Ziggy. And it was hugely impactful. My nervous system didn't feel as raw when I had the migraines when I was having regular chiropractic care. So although my childhood impact of using medications and my childhood impact of my dad using anything but Western medications impacted my ability to just keep my mind open to whatever was there. So like I have been on so many friggin' medications for pain. But having to balance that out with recognizing when I'm feeling like I'm taking too much of something, even as a teenager, recognizing that I'm not supposed to be taking so many T3s or Demerol and stuff like that for my cramps and for my migraines, because I feel bad when I'm not taking them. So it's trying to manage that as a teen was really challenging. And weigh it out with just recognizing that hydration was huge. When I'd go to the hospital with a migraine and they would just hook me up to an IV, and it was amazing how quickly something as quick as an IV, and sometimes IV with Toradol in it, would make me feel like I was alive again. So it's, again, going to the hospital, them teaching me that hydration, simple water, impacts how you feel about something. And that plays over into labor and delivery. When I first started being a birth doula, I remember there were some places that didn't want you to drink water. Mm-hmm. They just wanted you to be on an IV and said it didn't matter if you drank water. And I remember that play that stayed with me so long. I'm like, no, they told me at the hospital it was as important for me to mind my oral hydration as waiting for an IV, because it wasn't as effective. So it most certainly played over combining the two, and then there's a healthy combination of the two in how to manage pain and being open to taking whatever that looked like. So yeah, I'd say definitely my approach is that how my family treated pain, and that they did treat pain. They acknowledged that it was there, definitely played over into my adulthood and how I come to my clients who are experiencing pain. What did your family do, Kim? Besides toast and tea. I feel like all three of us have that relation that toast and tea was often the solution for many things.
Get no toast. There was no toast involved in our remedies. It was just tea and lie down.
Okay. That was from my tea.
And if you're this sick, you're too sick for TV.
Yeah. No, I mean the tea and toast came from my grandparents. It didn't come from my parents. But I mean, I certainly, even though my mom never had period pain either. And she couldn't understand what I was experiencing. However, she did respect that what I was feeling was what I was feeling. And as a kid, I had growing pains too. And remember, like, okay, you're this old. Okay, you can have this many baby aspirin. Okay, oh, geez, now you're like 14. Here's a bottle of baby aspirin. Because you're like, you're at the point where you're like up to like 5, 10. And I remember that tiny little bottle of baby aspirin being in the cupboard.
They were orange.
Pink. Ours were pink.
Pinky, orangey yeah. color. Yes, that's right.
And they tasted good.
They tasted like orange. They had an orange flavor. That's why orange is stuck in my head. They had this flavor.
You would chew them.
But I hated them. So I hated that flavor so much.
But then, you know, moving on, you know, switched over to Tylenol and whatnot. And I used to get migraines too. And the funny thing, the one thing that helped with my migraines the most was Alka-Seltzer. Because it was water, being hydrated, and it helped my stomach, which I would always get upset stomachs with my migraines. And of course it had an analgesic in it as well. And while we
Alka-Seltzer does really,
yeah, yeah. We always had Alka-Seltzer on in the house. And you know, my dad experienced a lot of physical pain and physical injuries and whatnot throughout my life. So, you know, he was always, my mom, not so much. Like she barely takes Tylenol when she has headache, even though she had migraines and whatnot as a kid. After she had babies, they went away. But she was always very wary of taking medication. My dad was sort of at the opposite end of the spectrum. Like, oh, if there's a pill, we got to take it. Oh, there's a pill, we should take two. Like he would always flit to that side. And of course, to the detriment of him, it was probably what sort of, probably the thing that ended his life. Because he was pretty much addicted to pain medication at the end because of his hips and his spine and the pain that he was experiencing. So my mom, because of that, is now even worse than she was before. She really doesn't want to take any medication. I'm like, Mom, like, just take the Tylenol. Can you just, like, I see you hobbling out of your car or getting up and hobbling to the kitchen. Just take the Tylenol. Like, it's not, we're talking about Tylenol. Basically baby aspirin, like just take it. But yeah, no, she was, and I kind of sit somewhere in the middle. I have a healthy respect for pain medication. I take Tylenol when I need it. I take it every night, actually, before I go to bed because of my hamstrings and hips and probably arthritis. But I do know that if I get into, I have to have a healthy respect for things like narcotics and things like that, and try to avoid them as best as possible, because I know I have the potential for possibly going that side where my dad was. And I don't want to do that. When it comes to labor, I mean, with my first baby, I was like, oh my God, do you know that with an epidural, they like stick something right in your spine and you're like paralyzed? Like, no way, man. I don't want that to happen. I can't be paralyzed for the rest of my life. And, you know, that utter fear of having an epidural that could potentially, you know, paralyze me. Like, there was no way. So, I mean, I had a midwife and that was, you know, I was going to go that route. And then, yeah, I ended up growing a 10-pound baby sitting OP on my back for 16 solid hours of an induction. And I was like, yeah, fuck that. I think I'm going to risk paralyzation.
Put that needle in my spine. Put that needle in my spine. I'm going to welcome some being paralyzed for the next little while.
100%.
Better than feeling this shit.
Yeah, no, fuck. I'm done. Like, I don't care. Even if this kills me, I don't care, because what I'm experiencing now
is death.
It's
might as well be death.
Yeah, it's actually worse than death.
Sweet, sweet sleep.
Yep. Yeah. 100%. So, you know, after that, it was like, yeah, okay. Like I respect because, you know, I mean, I made these grandiose choices and decisions without ever actually having had a baby. Like this was, you know, I didn't have the experience that I needed in order to make a decision, but this is why it's okay to change your mind during labor. You can make any decision you want right at the moment. It's totally fine. Mm-hmm. And then with Thomas, I was so scared that what happened the first time and what I experienced the first time was going to happen again, because I was being induced again. And I thought, you know what? I can't, the fear of that, like just stick it in, like hook me up. I don't want to experience any of that. Forget it. I can't. And then with Allie, you know, wiser couple years later, I was like, you know what? The second one went so good. Let's just see what happens. Okay. Yes, I'm being induced again, but let's see what happens. Let's see how far I can go. And while it was hard work, it wasn't as scary because I had that second, I had that sort of second experience with Thomas being such a good birth. So I think sometimes, you know, it's funny, you know, just to backtrack with Allie, who also gets pretty bad period cramps. I don't go, okay, well, here's your Tylenol. I'll just go, there's Tylenol there if you want to take it. Like it's up to you, whatever you want to do. And she usually goes hot water bottles, and it's usually kind of extreme. If she actually goes for Tylenol, she'll maybe take one with her to school and whatnot if she's feeling, you know, uncomfortable. But I was not like my mom going, okay, you have period cramps, here's your baby aspirin. Oh, this is what's happening here. Take this. It's a matter of me giving her the choice, saying, you know, here, you're 17 years old. If you need it, here it is. Okay. Yeah. Like you don't have to take it. It's totally up to you. And I know she doesn't want to take it, but there are definitely, you know, there are some months where she's just in a lot of discomfort. So again, and she'll only take like one, like she again has sort of a healthy respect for pain medication, but not to the point where she's going to avoid it completely, but she'll take it if she needs it. Right. Mm-hmm. And I mean, you get these people. So one of the questions that we talked about was, you know, why are there people that will do it without at labor, without, you know, an epidural, and why are there some that will do it? And there are some, I mean, I think there's it pisses me off when there's like these very staunch camps, you know, of you have to do it without pain medication. You have to do it with pain medications. What are you, crazy? And it's like, you know, there's like a whole bunch of gray in this middle here. Like nothing when it comes to birth is black and white. And we need to like really start normalizing that whatever birth experience you have, that's your experience. And it doesn't matter what this person over there did or that person over there did. This is your experience and how you experience it. That's your birth. Was it Penny Simpkin? That's like, you know, how will you remember this birth? And that's just it. How are you going to remember this birth? Empowered, you ask questions, you had the birth that you wanted. Great. There you go. There's your experience. It doesn't matter what this person did or what that person did. But I often get these questions that are like, you know, why would anybody do it without an epidural? It's like, okay, well,
that's the other camp too. That's the other right? camp.
Yeah. Like, well, it's their prerogative, right? It's their choice. It's their situation and their choice that they want to do it that way. And you're
I love that when you said we've got to normalize the fact that there are all kinds of experiences. That's it. Exactly. We have to normalize the fact that there are some people who will be like, yeah, my pain is about a 3, but I'm ready to get hooked up to my epidural right now. And then there are other people on the other end of the spectrum who are like, yeah, I'm at a 10++, but I'm all right. I'm just going to like keep feeling this until the baby is born. That those are two ends. And then there's a whole bunch of different experiences in between, and we need to normalize all of them because that's it weird. Is so individual, and it comes from so many different places, like how our families treated pain as we were children and how you experienced pain growing up. I just had like a thought in my head that my parents, my mother, she was the one who was in charge of all of that stuff, never said to me when I was in horrible period cramp pain, here's some pain medication to make this easier for you. She never said that to me, not because she had made some sort of stance against medication. She wasn't, as far as I know, there was never anything said about, oh, the big pharma and blah, blah, nothing like that came up. I'm thinking to myself that it has something to do with this real exaggerated, and I could give you lots of examples, especially of the women in my family and of Jamaican people in general, this exaggerated sense of independence, that whatever you're feeling, you have somehow got to make it through, even if it means grit your teeth and hold on. It's not going to last forever. Grit your teeth, hold on, and it will be over soon. If it's your period, you don't bleed 30 days of the month. If you bleed 5 days of them, you're going to suffer for 5 days and it's going to be over. And then you pick yourself up and move on. I'm thinking now that it has something to do with that kind of attitude. And even if when you're in the middle of it, you feel like, oh my God, this feels horrible and helpless and hopeless, there's something that tells you it's not going to be forever. And I can absolutely relate that to my emotional state when I was having my first baby. I literally felt like I was going to die. But part of me, the nurses were saying, no, you're not going to die. This is fine. Everything's fine. And just saying, I got to get. And then when I finally did have the baby, that sense of, I made it through all by myself. And that is a source of pride with Jamaican people in general, and the women in my family. Oh my God, we're trying to change that whole thing, at least within our family culture right now, because it's not healthy. No. It is not healthy. And ain't nobody got to suffer like that to prove what, to whom, to nobody. That's what. So we're really, really trying to change that now, but it's still there. It is a thing in our, and me going through all of my babies with no pain medication. My mother said to me, that was the first thing she would tell people when she would talk about, when they say, oh, your daughter had her baby. Yes. And she didn't use any pain medication at all. She just did the whole thing by herself. Not by myself, with tons and tons of support from great midwives and you and my sister. And like, it wasn't just me alone in a cave, but that would be the first thing that she would say now that I'm thinking about it.
Yeah.
And then with my sister would say, I'm going to try not to have an epidural this time. And she would be horrified and say to my sister, no, that's not a good idea. So we've talked about that too. Why did she push me and be so happy that I didn't use pain medication, but with my sister, she didn't? That's a kind of a little weird thing.
But yeah, I think it'd be the same, but no.
Or more protective of her younger, her baby, right? But
yeah.
Maybe she saw in me more of like the Jamaican independent resilience. My sister was a Canadian kid who got all, you know, everything softy and cushioned for her all throughout her life. Whereas I didn't. So my sister, it seemed like, well, she didn't have any hardships, so she can't handle childbirth. So I don't know. My sister didn't have period cramps. I did. And my mother watched me sweat through them and then get up. Okay, ready to face another day. It really is like a thing, an archetype for Jamaican women, and I carried that into my adulthood. And we didn't have Tylenol even in the house. We had baby aspirin that was only used if I had a fever, and we had Vicks, and constipation medicine. Castoria, yeah, that was what it's called. Castoria. And that's basically it. That's all we had in our house. We didn't even have a thermometer. This was our thermometer.
Yeah,
your hand on your head. That was the thermometer, and that's it. We didn't have any pain medication, and we're fortunate that nobody had migraines or any kind of chronic issues that caused them to need pain medication. So wow. I'm now convinced that has definitely affected my thinking about pain. And I've done a lot of work to change my attitude about birth and pain during childbirth, because let me tell you something. I know that there are a lot of childbirth education methods and people who don't want to talk about pain in childbirth and don't want to, they don't even want to use the word pain. And I feel very resentful of that, because I felt pain. And most of the clients that I've had, they've felt pain, and calling it power surges ain't going to change that. It was pain. And why can't we, I mean, I'm welcome to hearing other points of view, but my question is, why can't we call it pain, look at it and say, yeah, man, this might be like fucking kick your ass pain more than you've ever felt in your life. And that might be how it is for you, but there are people who walk through that. And then there are people who have far, far less than that and use pain medication. And we are open to all of that. I am anyways, I'm open to all of it.
It depends on what they bring forward with them. Like, do they relate pain to trauma, or do they relate that pain to hard work or intensity? Like what is called up in a person when they feel what they feel? And, you know, there's someone who is laboring. And then I'll tell you, there is somebody who is experiencing back labor, which is pain plus labor, which is a different pain plus labor. Like when you see people who, like you, I've seen it. I'm sure you guys have seen it too. And Kim, you've had back labor. It is traumatic to see the look on someone's face where they feel like their body is betraying them. Like, it's like, why is someone shoving a knife, two knives in my back right now? Why am I screaming instead of breathing? Why am I even screaming instead of moaning? Why does it feel like this? That is fucking pain. That is back me up. Insert all the medication, please. And you see there's so many nerve endings in our back, you know, like if there's times when your lower back being touched feels like a warm hug. And there's times where your back being touched feels like you want to throat punch somebody. Like there's so many nerves. So there's labor pain, and then there's back labor pain. And I tell you, watching someone with true back labor, wanting to get out of their own body, get out of their own skin, man, it is. If you sent, let me put it this way. If men experienced that, they would have some sort of something created now to fix it. And I'm not talking about an epidural. I'm talking about literally logistically have created a whole machine that you put the person in and it shakes them up so it moves the baby. Like, if it is unlike anything else. And then there's like, I don't want to say common labor pain, because again, everyone experiences differently. My periods look a lot different than someone else, which means my labor would look a lot different than somebody else. But I really liked what you said there when you said, I didn't do it alone. I did it with great support. Mm-hmm. So when people say I didn't treat my growing pains and my initial period pains with medication, no, but I it was treated with, you know, my sister coming in and kneeling on my back for me, bringing me hot water bottles and making sure I stayed hydrated and giving me freezies and popsicles. And my legs were rubbed. Like, we literally had a system where each one of my aunties or uncle would rub my legs and my grandfather would read me stories. So I had a community of support, even though I didn't have medicine. So my labor could be treated with medicine, or my labor could be treated with community, or both. You know, and that's where my approach comes from, that both help, both create a sense of being cared for, both create a sense of strength. Like, you feel stronger when there's people with you who love you or appreciate you, or at least understand what you're going through and respect what you're going through, and don't try and make what you're going through something else. They just believe you right where you're at.
I think for me, when I talk about contractions and things like that in labor or and whatnot in my classes, is I won't actually use the word pain. And again, it comes to what you said, Stephanie, is that many people will associate pain with trauma. And I'm trying to get a different, like, labor is work. Contractions are your muscle contracting to move your baby down. And yes, it's uncomfortable. And yes, there is, you know, intensity to those muscle contractions. For me, though, if I use the word pain, because in my own head, if I'm using the word pain, I'm in like, I'm 5 minutes from dying. If I use the word pain, I'm literally 5 minutes from dying. I actually only use the word pain for my own issues when I'm talking about like a 1 centimeter kidney stone trying to exit my body. Like for me, that's fucking pain. But even with back labor and whatnot, for me, pain is sharp. For me, pain is like a knife, like stabbing sharp glass pain. Whereas with labor and other things that I experience in my life, for me, it's like an ache, an intensity in that ache that even with back labor is uncomfortable. But I never look at it as pain because for me, pain is 5 minutes from death. So I don't necessarily talk about pain. I will talk about the intensity of contractions. I will talk about the discomfort you're going to feel in the beginning, which is like kind of achiness and whatnot. And then that's going to intensify, but I don't actually use the word pain in my classes. And I'm guessing that's probably just from my own psychological thing, because I don't want them to be thinking that pain is that you're going to get in labor is going to be you being 5 minutes from death, because that's not the case.
No, that's not the case. Even
anticipating that it will be pain, because not everybody, like some people get an epidural because they're worried that they're going to get to pain because someone told them that pain is coming.
Yes.
When what they might be experiencing it as, and this is just recently a client as well, who felt like she was running, she had run marathons before, and she related what she felt at the highest intensity of her labor, and she had an unmedicated doula supported and partner supported labor, and then she had a doctor come in who spoke Polish, and so she, that made her feel even more supported because she could get out of her English head and just speak Polish. She just felt like it was this, she related it to the same level of intensity and some pain that she experienced in running a marathon, but she also remembered the marathon ended. Mm-hmm. Like you said before, Suzanne, if you push through, and you can push through because it's possible because she's done it, then it ends and then it's over.
Yes. And when I, in my classes, when we talk about all of this stuff, I talk about pain, like pain is the actual title of that discussion, pain. Let's talk about pain. We talk about the word, what it means, what it has meant to them all their life. Pain is when you smash your finger with a hammer. Pain is when you you have a migraine. That is pain. And then my goal is to get them to understand. So I have this whole process where I talk them through what they have always thought of as pain. And though, even though the sensations that the actual physical sensation they may feel in labor as painful, that it is not the pain of suffering. That's what it's not suffering pain. Like when you break your toe, something is broken. Something is harmed. Harm has been done. Now you are suffering because there's a certain amount of suffering that needs to happen before you reach to complete healing. That is not what the pain of childbirth feels like. And I love it that you said that for you, pain means sharp stabbing. My period pains when I was a young teenager, they weren't sharp stabbing, but that ache was like bone ache, a bone ache that was like ratcheted up to 10. It wasn't sharp and stabbing. I have felt sharp and stabbing pains before for my digestive issues. My labor pains to me were like the worst Charlie horse you can absolutely imagine, the kind that you get in your calves, that where your calf is like a hard knot like this, all across my belly. That's what my labor pains felt like. And I think that the goal is, yeah, talking to, and then I use the word discomfort a lot, and I use the word intensity a lot, and I use the word sensation a lot, because those things are true and neutral. And I also talk about the spectrum. I have had two clients in my whole career who felt nothing, never mind pain. They literally felt nothing. One slept all night and woke up and the baby practically fell out. She slept through the whole first stage of labor. And then another one who was hooked up to the oxytocin and felt nothing. And they were wondering why the oxytocin wasn't working. She came in fingertip dilated and they examined her. She was 9 3, like with just a lip, and she felt nothing.
Yeah.
That is one end of the spectrum. And then there are people who are in, don't call it anything else, it is mind blowing, animal howling pain. And how each of those people deal with it is different. But the sensation, the sensation of birth also happens along a spectrum. How we deal with those sensations also happens along a spectrum. What we think and feel about it also all happens along a spectrum. And that's what makes it so individual. There are so many variables. Mm-hmm. There's somebody who could say my pain intensity is an 8, but no, I do not want an epidural, because I was taught by my family and my culture that that's weakness and I'm just going to push through it anyway. Like, that's one story. Mm-hmm. Then there's another story, and it's like a cake. Everybody puts in all their own individual ingredients and you've got this cake that is your birth experience. So for me, the key with my classes is to let people know that there is a spectrum for everybody, and you get to decide how you deal with it, and you get to decide what you think about it. But I want them to know that the pain of childbirth is not suffering. It's not trauma. It is your body working hard to get your baby born. And that is just simply how it feels, because it's doing that hard work.
And it
took me a long time to get there. Pardon?
It doesn't have to feel the way anybody else feels, because it's ridiculous to assume that any two people are going to experience that intensity the same, or experience whatever sensation they're having the same as their sister. Again, my sister, we walked into Mount Sinai when her contractions were 9 minutes apart, and she walked in and, well, sorry, she didn't walk in, she went in a wheelchair, and we got up there, and as we got to the book-in station, she's waving at the nurse over it because she's still in her wheelchair. Epidural. I'm here for my epidural. And she's like, well, we got to find out if you're even going to stay here with us. And she's like, just epidural. And because she didn't want to get there. My sister didn't even want to get to the place where there was pain. Now, she came into this experience having ulcerative colitis, right? She already experienced pain in her life. She's like, today I'm not fucking experiencing pain. Fuck that shit. I have dealt with enough pain. I have been on all the medications and they only work to a certain extent. Today, I'm feeling nothing from the waist down in all that area that already gives me pain. Sure. But she was just like not having it. And I'm pretty sure that she would have just, if they tried to send her home, she would have just like hold up, like she wouldn't move. She would have laid down on the floor and said, until you take me in, I'm not leaving. She was very sure. But what was wild and crazy is that the day before at her doctor's appointment, and this is my sister giving birth at 39 weeks. The day before her doctor's appointment, she had been high and closed, nice thick cervix. Now she's there with 9-10 minute apart contractions, and she's almost 6 centimeters dilated. So the cervix is not a crystal ball. It means nothing. And yeah, so they admitted her in, and I mean, that was a whole other wild and crazy. We were actually going for a C-section when she ended up giving birth to Gracie Kate, because the forceps had failed and everything. And then we went down the hall and turned into the OR. And strangely, they let me go in to the OR with her without scrubbing or anything first. Usually they send you off to get scrubbed. I think maybe just because she had hold of me. We got in there, and then she looked at me and she's like, oh, Steppy, I'm going to barf. And so we turned her on her side to vomit. And then she goes, oh, Steppy, I'm going to shit my pants. And then there was Grace. like all marked up on her face from having forceps that didn't work and all that. And all she needed to do was turn on her side and vomit. And she shut that Grace's head right down to her pelvic floor. And then she shot out Grace, who was 9:15, and just tore her right open. But she was epiduralized and everything like that. But she just came so hard and fast all of a sudden from turning to her right side instead of turning to her left, which is where we've been pushing. And boom, out she came. But it is amazing how everyone's body experiences labor differently like that.
Well, it's not, if we want to get a little bit woo-woo, I mean, it's not necessarily what the body is experiencing. It's how the mind is interpreting those sensations.
100%.
And I think we too often ignore that mind-body connection, and we too often ignore the power that the mind has over our bodies. And we can't do that. Those two things are not independent from one another. They are connected. And again, this is why in my classes, I'm trying to use, when I teach, I try to use words that are visual, and I try to use words that are going to, you know, create a story for people in their mind, so that when they do go into labor, that story that they already have in their mind can play out. You know what I mean? Like that can be helpful in, you know, getting to a point in the labor where, you know, maybe you don't feel like you're dying at 2 centimeters, but maybe you get a little bit further than that. And that's great. And if you don't, and my story was useless to you, and you can't sort of picture that in your head, then that's okay too. And if you need an epidural at 2 centimeters, well, then that's okay too. I always feel like my classes are there to help try and remove some of the anxiety and fear around birth, so that you can go into it with a slightly more open mind that, yeah, this is something your body's going to do, but you're going to have to think about it that way as well.
So also respecting that an individual coming into a hospital, when we talk about the mind-body connection, even if you are excited to be birthing at the hospital and you on a conscious level feel safe birthing at the hospital, it's your safe birthing place, being vulnerable, succumbing, being so deep in your labor where you literally have to trust everyone around you so you can just labor. If someone is not that person, or they've had a negative experience, or it's just they're being watched, having an epidural, sometimes having medication where they're able to get back into their head and be in a position to be relating to people who are part of her care team, as opposed to succumbing and just doing the work of labor while other people are around that you don't know. Sometimes the epidural is the thing that gets you to that. You can't be dealing with your labor and feeling safe at the same time. Mm-hmm. And it's a very primal thing. And so I don't even know that everybody necessarily recognizes that, but sometimes you have those clients who just keep wanting to run away to the bathroom until the epidural gets there. I don't know if you guys have had those clients who are just like, no, just either get the epidural here or get out. Stop talking to me. Stop doing this. Like, they need people to just stop so they can just labor until that epidural gets there. They can't be socializing, they can't be answering questions, they can't be doing anything else. And you can see how it increases their pain when people come in and out of the room. Like, they're mm-hmm. it's visceral. You can see it in their body language and everything. Mm-hmm. And so often I'll find that those people who are wanting the epidural, it's because they can't do both. That it is overwhelming to be doing labor. Like, they were laboring really well at home. They might've even been laboring really well in triage with, you know, it's small, you can close the curtains and everything. And then as soon as you're in the bigger room that they tout as wonderful and these big open spaces and stuff, it just changes how they are in their body. But you know what? Getting that epidural helps them feel grounded again because they couldn't labor the other way.
Yeah, that's right. And I actually talk about that too, that getting the epidural, it's a way to remove one of the huge distress. So for instance, if you're like exhausted, you're exhausted. That getting an epidural isn't necessarily because you're feeling too much pain, but you're so exhausted that you cannot deal with the sensations of the contractions and your exhaustion and everything else on top of it, or grief. I had somebody who was dealing with a huge amount of grief because her mom had just passed away and she was just overwhelmed with grief during labor. She could not deal with the grief plus the contractions plus everything else around her. So what can we control? We can take away the intensity of the contractions with the epidural, so to give you room to deal with all the other stuff. And I think that acknowledging the mind-body connection, I don't think it's woo-woo at all. Mm-hmm. I've decided that it is actually pragmatic because it's true. It's true. And there's science. We can dig and we can find science to show that how you approach and how you think. We now know that when you change your thoughts, you can literally change the grooves in your brain or something like that. Like neuroplasticity is a real thing that we know, that when people change their habits and do things differently and think differently, you literally change your brain. So mind-body connection, it is real. It is scientific. It is not woo-woo. It is actually grounded in reality. And that's what pragmatism is all about. So I don't feel no way talking about it to clients and students in my class, because they're so connected that you ignore it to your detriment.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, not doing anybody a service by pretending that labor is just a physiological, that birth is a physiological process, and that's all.
So, I mean, you talk about, you know, there's so many layers when it comes to birth and so many reasons why people would get an epidural. Like when I got my first one, it was partly for the fact that things were really intense and back labor was really intense. And there was a lot going on and my midwife was fucking useless. But on top of everything else was the fact that I was stalled at 6 centimeters. I wasn't moving forward. And it was like, oh, you're still 6 centimeters. And it's like, so that means I have to keep, your brain kicks into gear and goes, that means I'm not moving forward. Well, what the fuck is the point at this point?
How much longer am I going to have to work this hard in order to get some progress here?
Well, exactly. And I mean, if she had done the exam and gone, oh, you're 9 centimeters, you're doing really good, it'd be like, oh, okay, let's keep going. Like, I'm almost at the end. I can keep doing this. But it wasn't. Like, I was stalled at 6 centimeters for many, many hours. It was like, okay, well, I can't anymore. Like, I can't. But then, of course, their first suggestion is a cesarean birth. And I'm like, nope, that's not the plan. And, you know, bursting into tears and having a big giant ugly cry was extremely helpful in getting the staff to sort of step back and go, okay, you know what, let's get you an epidural. Let's get you some sleep. Baby's doing good. And then we'll have a conversation. I'm like, okay, great. And then, you know, just a few hours of sleep and not being connected to my body anymore allowed me to get fully dilated. And I needed to, because my brain, I'm guessing, was shutting shit down, going, you can't do anymore. And my brain's going, yeah, I can't do anymore. And the body's like, oh, we can't do anymore. Okay, let's not do anymore. Oh, but by the way, we've still got some Pitocin happening here. So we're going to keep, you know, your body's going to keep doing it.
Yeah.
And at that point, then these two things are warring against one another. So something had to give, something had to be taken out of the equation. And that was me. I needed to be taken out of the equation. And that happened with the epidural. It took me out of all of that, took my mind out of all of that, allowed me to get some sleep and was able to get fully dilated. Now, in hindsight, him being almost 10 pounds, a cesarean birth was probably a better option. But everything did end up working out, which is totally fine. But I think the other side of that is that nobody told me he was big. Nobody said, you've got a really big baby in there. Nobody said your baby's in the 90th percentile. Nobody.
What would have changed? Like, how would that have made all through your labor? You'd be thinking, well, of course this is not progressing. I've got this giant baby inside of me. Yeah.
Fit. He's not.
So when they said cesarean, you're going to be, you would have been like, well, of course I need a cesarean. I got this giant baby inside of me.
Exactly. But nobody, even though I was probably measuring big, nobody told me anything. Nobody didn't have those late stage ultrasounds. Nobody told me you've got a really big baby in there. Yes, people on the street told me I was fat and I was probably having twins, but nobody told me I had a big baby in there. So I didn't have in my brain that seed of doubt that my body couldn't do it.
Couldn't do it.
Because in my brain, I could do it. It just needed some help. And that help came in the form of an epidural.
Yes.
Because I couldn't manage that level of discomfort for any longer. Like I'd done it for like 6 solid hours. I couldn't do it anymore. I was done. And it was like,
that made me think about what you just said, made me think about something else that's kind of not related, but it's interesting anyway. That is this when our obsession with weight starts?
Yeah.
Oh my God. Before we're even freaking born. Because we've talked before about why is it that doctors, when you go for a checkup, are so obsessed with your weight instead of looking at your blood numbers. So if you've got somebody in front of you who looks like a fat person, yet their cholesterol is amazing, their blood sugar is fantastic, their blood pressure is great, they're active and happy and healthy in every other way, then what the fuck does their weight have to do with anything? Nothing. Nothing. Mm-hmm. So why is it that when we have ultrasounds, why mention weight at all and percentile of size at all, unless there's something
wrong,
clinically wrong, that we need to address, that we can do something about?
If we're talking about intrauterine growth restriction, fuck yeah, we're going to talk about that end of the spectrum of percentile. But why are we scaring the crap out of people? Because people do get scared when we creep over that 60th percentile. Like,
you,
oh my
God, their baby's 70. In the 90th percentile.
It blows their mind.
That I show them in class, they see the size of that pelvis, and in their head, they're like, oh, fuck, no way.
Yeah.
And people are told way more often that they have big babies than when there is actually an issue with intrauterine growth restriction.
Yeah.
I would say 80% of the time we're talking about, oh, your baby's really big. Then we are really talking about a problem about your baby not growing well.
Or when I hate this one too. When they're in there doing a vaginal exam, when you're in labor and go, not feeling a lot of room there. What the fuck?
Keep that to yourself.
Keep that shit to yourself. Or when they go, you know, oh yeah, we got a lot of room here. That baby, you know, we got a lot of room. And you're like, well, okay. Thanks for telling us that. What purpose does that serve?
If anybody had told me when I was 17, right? I was horrified when I gave birth. Horrified, I tell you, when my son was born at 8 pounds, 9 ounces as a 17-year-old who hadn't even finished growing herself. And I gave birth to a baby that size. If the doctor had said to me, whoa, this baby is big, he's going to be, you know, more than 8.5 pounds, I would have fucking freaked out. And if anybody had hinted to me, maybe you should just get a cesarean, I would have jumped at the chance.
Me too. I would have jumped at the chance if that midwife had said, your baby's going to be over 9 pounds.
But thank goodness I was so old. Ultrasound was just like brand new in the early 80s. So,
Man, when I had Kira and stuff, I was the opposite. And I'm like, I don't want that fucking 10-pound baby. I want that juicy turkey baby. I want this giant baby. Because, and especially the further I got to the end, because, you know, it was like 43 weeks when I had Kira. I was like, yeah, bring on this big fat baby. I want this big fat chunky baby. Because big babies are normal in my family. So
did you not have any concept of where that baby was coming out of?
In my family, it's normal. And I'm taller than most of the women in my family. And so I assume if these little women who are built like 10-year-old boys can fucking pop out, you know, 9 to 11-pound babies like a Pez dispenser, that me, who's taller, I'm like, yeah, bring on the 10-pound juicy, funky baby and all this stuff. And in 43 weeks, I'm guaranteed. And she was fucking 7'15". Like 8, we couldn't even break 8. I get this little tiny fart of a baby at 7'15". And then same thing with Xander, 42 weeks, 7'15". Abby, 42 weeks, 7-8. I'm like, I am fucking going backwards.
Meanwhile, I'm having babies at 38 weeks and they're like 9 pounds.
Yeah.
I had to wait until Megan, who for her, all I'd ate was Doritos. And finally, I got a nice 9.5 pound baby. I'm surprised I didn't have gestational diabetes. I wanted ice cream, popsicles, and Doritos.
And you know, in my, again, family influence, and I'd never thought of this before, but when my mom had my sister was 9 pounds, 9 ounces, right?
Yep.
However, my mom was 43 weeks when she gave birth. Mm-hmm. And this was, she was a classic postnatal baby, not just her size, but no amniotic fluid, no vernix. She was dry. Her hair was like as long as this. She looked so much hair. She had fingernails that curved over toenails that curved over. So clearly a post-dates baby. So she probably, my sister probably would have weighed 7 something if she was born at 40 weeks. Who knows? Closer to average size. But the reaction of my family at my mom giving birth to this 9 pound, somebody was ready to call the Guinness Book of World Records. They acted as if my mom gave birth to like a football player. They could not believe it. And there was no talk about, well, she was 43 weeks and clearly post dates. That's why she weighed that much. And people freaked out about it. And I remember that stuck with me. My aunt, there weren't very many other babies born in the family, and they were all like 6 pounds, 7 pounds, 6 pounds, 7 pounds. And now here I was giving birth, and I thought for sure I'm going to have, I equated the fact that I was so young that I was going to have a small baby. And I wanted a 6 pound baby. That's what I felt was normal. There were girls in my school who had given birth to babies, and their babies were all probably underweight. But I was so obsessed with prenatal nutrition and all of that. I friggin' took my vitamins and did everything I was supposed to do and grew this fat 8 pounds. Also, my son is now 6'4". So he was just probably destined to be that size, but I was horrified. And I know that that came, now that I'm thinking, that came from my family's reaction to my sister's birth weight and how everybody said, oh my gosh, because I was like 6.5 pounds. And because back in the 60s, you restricted what you ate for that reason.
I was just over 5 pounds.
Like, yeah,
I was, you were full term.
You smoked to keep the size of the baby down.
They deliberately trying to keep the size of the baby down.
Yes.
So I was 6.5 pounds, probably not for good reasons, probably because my mother restricted what she was eating.
Yeah.
And then with my sister, she went, you know, 3 weeks past due date. So yeah, I'm thinking, sorry, got us off track. But that occurred to me exactly when you talked about, if somebody had told me that Will was 10 pounds, it would have changed your whole mindset going 100%. Into
one.
So we need to stop 100%. Doing that. I have a client right now who's being induced today, because they were told she's 39 weeks, her baby's 8.5 pounds.
Normal.
Well, okay.
Could be normal for her. Who knows?
Yes.
Like, we don't know. And we also have to consider that that baby might not be 8.5 pounds. That baby could be 7.5 pounds.
That's right.
That baby could be 9.5 pounds. We don't know.
Ultrasound is not, cervix is not a crystal ball, and ultrasound either is not a crystal. Oh, so I know we've had all of this discussion already. So at the end of the day, I was like, how do you feel about having an induction? Oh, I feel great. I can't wait. Great. Terrific. Let's go.
Then you know what, let's do you.
Yes.
But okay, so here's the other thing. When you hear people, not as a doula, because you would have been with the clients, but when you hear people talk about their birth or things like that, and you know, so-and-so had their baby, do you instantly think, how did they have that baby? Was it a cesarean? Did they have an epidural? Was there, or did they do it without any pain medication? How did that go? I mean, I know I do this with celebrities, and I almost pray that they don't say, because I know that anything they say could potentially influence, you know, the way people look and think about birth. But do you do that? Do you secretly, not judge, but secretly, you know, want to know what the hell, how did that all happen?
I can honestly say at this point, I can't remember what I used to say, or if there's been a change. There probably has been a change. But I can honestly say I immediately wonder, I wonder how the birth went.
Yeah.
I'm curious about the birth story, but yes, I don't, yeah. I'm not curious about, did they have an epidural? Did they end up with a C-section? Did they blah, blah, blah. I simply want to know the story. How did it go? How did you feel? How were you treated? Yeah. I want to know, did you have an epidural or not? Because that's a part of the experience, mm-hmm. but I honestly just kind of want to know, how did it go overall? Yeah. I just want to know the birth story.
Mm-hmm. Because I have a, I have a client who I wasn't their doula for the second baby. I was a doula with them for their first baby, and they had their second baby. And I was like, oh my God, I just want to know, how did that all go? Like, what happened? Because I remember her first birth. I really want to know what this one was like that I wasn't there for. Was it as good? Was it, you know, not as good? What went different? Things like that. So did you get an epidural? I'm pretty sure she had an epidural the first time, but it's like, was there cesarean birth involved? Was there, like, what happened this second time around that I wasn't there for? But I think that's me being more nosy than anything else.
Mm-hmm. Oh, interesting. What about you, Steph? What comes to mind when you hear about somebody's birth?
The first question that always pops up is, how is she feeling? Or how are they feeling? Like,
oh, so it's just me who's a nosy bitch, and the rest of you are like all...
No, I'm nosy. I'm totally nosy. But I just want to know all the details. There isn't any one detail that I want to know more than other details. I want to know, I wonder how it went. I wonder what the story of that birth is. That's what I want to know. I want to know all of it. What time did you get there? What time were you admitted? Okay, what did you think about the room? Did you use the jacuzzi? Oh, so did that thing that we, you know, like all of that stuff, I want to know. But I don't, whether or not they had pain meds or something like that, I don't really care.
I just want to know that the first thing I ask is, how is she feeling? How are they feeling? And it's, I'm amazed how often that someone says, well, I guess they're okay. And it's like, well, did you ask? Like you spoke to them. Did anyone ask how they're feeling? If there's anything they need, like that's the first thing. So when someone else tells me that they just had a baby, or if I meet someone, they said they just had a baby, I'm like, how are you feeling?
That's very good. That should be the first question. You're correct.
Usually when you ask how they're feeling, they'll tell you how they're feeling. And if they're particularly vulnerable, they'll tell you all those other things because they're trying to make sense of why they're feeling that way. Sometimes you don't know why you're feeling that way. You know, it's a combination of all these things that literally just happened to you, you know? Yeah.
I just want to satisfy my selfish need to know everything about people's lives first.
Well, ask them,
oh my gosh, how are you feeling in relation to how things went? Like, what happened? Yes. So I have ulterior motives. If I say, how are you feeling? It is because I want to know if you feel great. I want to know how you got to great. How did you get to great? Tell me all the details. Or if you feel shitty, well, how did you get to shitty? I want to know all the details.
Yeah.
To be honest. I thought you were going to say, Kim, do you automatically ask, did you have a boy or girl and how much did they weigh? I thought that's what you were going to say.
Yeah.
Those are details.
It's funny. I don't even care about that stuff.
Yeah. Me neither. I don't care about that anymore. I don't also like just in the same way that I don't care about whether or not you had an epidural or not.
No, that I do want to know.
I want to know, but it's not like the burning issue.
Oh no, it's totally burning in my head. I want to know.
if it was a celebrity, I even more want to know because it's like their birth is going, and if they speak about it publicly, whatever their experience is going to have an effect one way or the other.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Huh. Interesting. Cool. You people always get my mind working. Thank you very much.
Cool.
So my hope for this whole topic on pain and that is when you brought it up, Suzanne, my thought was bringing this conversation up. I want to say more so for newer doulas to just consider why their clients might be wanting something and that there is stuff beyond physiology of birth. We come to birth, we come to anything in our life with a culmination of all the other things that have impacted us. And I've seen more and more where younger doulas, younger in their career doulas, feel responsible when their client has chosen an epidural when they expressly said they didn't want one prior to labor. Like they take it on as their own, as a responsibility. And sometimes that responsibility is even pushed on them by the client afterwards. Mm-hmm. And they feel that from their client, or sometimes it's even expressed that I didn't get the support I needed, so I got the epidural. And it's like, then that's a great piece of information we have now. What would support look like for you? How much support would you need? What would it actually physically look like in order for you to feel like you don't need that epidural? Next time, do we need to work on fear? Do we need to work on your perception of what the work is doing? Reminders that this is finite, that it has a finite amount of time and it's over. What does that look like? So not taking it on, just taking it as information. And I really hope that some doulas who might be younger in their career take that to heart, that it's not our responsibility to get someone through without an epidural. It's our responsibility to get someone through listening, understanding, and supporting where they're at and what they came to this birth with.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. 100%. Thanks for laying it out all so neatly.
Excellent.
So what are you guys doing this afternoon? What are you wrapping up your day with?
I'm teaching tonight, so I might just putter around here this afternoon.
I'm also going to do some puttering around the house. I'm going to maybe, and I say maybe because my basement is a disaster, maybe haul out the Christmas bin. Just not starting any Christmas things, just to see what's in there. Because I have a tendency at the end of the Christmas season, I'm so fed up with it. I just like throw everything in there. I don't wrap things up. I don't do anything. I just throw everything in there and shove it back in the basement wherever. So today's the day I want to open it up, look at the condition of the bin, see what's in it. What can I untangle that's usable? And that way that will tell me, what do I need to buy new lights? Do I need to buy new whatever for Christmas decorating coming up in a few weeks? That's what I'm doing this afternoon. I'm hoping to go to for a walk with Siggy because we just took like a quick pee break this morning. We haven't really gone for a walk. That's it. Oh, those clients, two clients being induced today.
Two.
Yep. They just somehow they converged. One is 40 weeks and 2 days, and one is 39 weeks, and they're both getting induced today. So I'll be supporting two virtual births. Support situation. Well, they're who knows? They're both getting Foleys put in today.
Right. Okay. So we don't know how that's all gonna go.
That's right. I have no idea what's gonna happen after today. So I'm just like checking in with them about that for now.
So I did want to give a shout out to a doula. We got a message, and I apologize to Nicole for not doing this prior. When she sent this message was the week I actually wasn't there, and was dealing with my uncle's death. So, and of course, last week we had, Sabrina on. So this is from Nicole Vaz, the Guelph doula. And she says, I never do this. I never randomly message accounts, although probably something I should do. But I stumbled on your podcast and I have to tell you just how much I love it. Being from Ontario, yes. Canada myself, I must share just how much I resonate with your podcast, especially the Encapsulation podcast. Thank you for doing what you do and sharing with the world. So that is Nicole Vaz, and her handle is Guelph Doula, Guelph Doula. So go ahead and follow them on Instagram.
I'm going to look them up right now. Just Guelph Doula straight,
no dashes or dots or anything. And it's Nicole, Nicole Vaz, Vaz. So there you go.
Amazing.
Awesome. So thank you for writing in, and we super appreciate you, and we are so appreciative of you contacting us and giving, you know, shouting out to us. So if anybody else wants to give a shout out and get spoken about on the podcast, let us know. You can send us something through Instagram. See,
Nicole just gained like 3 followers.
There you okay? go.
She sure did.
I'm just following her beautiful page here. It's lovely. And there, 3 followers right there.
There you go. So
now all people have to do is, you know, subscribe.
Send us an email. Tell us how much you love us.
Or send us their book requests, their book suggestions.
Send us. So
if you send us an email and tell us we suck, we're not reading that email.
Oh, we might.
On the air. Maybe. Is it constructive, pragmatic criticism?
Well, it depends. If it is, then yeah, we will read it. But if you're just being an asshole, no, fuck you. We're not.
Okay. All right. Let me go haul up my Christmas stuff. You guys be good.
All right.
Have a good day, guys.
Bye.
Bye. Thank you.